Attention painters, are you sick and tired of dealing with semi-reliable staff? Do you feel like you need to be on site all day because you can't trust your crew to do their damn job? Well, the reality is you probably have an accountability problem. And the bad news is you're babysitting your crews so much, it's hard to tell if you're running a painting business or a daycare. The good news is though, improving performance with your team is surprisingly easy to fix. Yes, even in your location and with your team size. Join me for a special web class July 8th. Where we'll show you how to eliminate all staff excuses, bringing one structured 30-minute meeting to life. This is gonna help you cultivate a reliable team without awkward conversations, conflicts, or festering resentment. July 8th, be there or be square. Click the link in the description. Let's register now and make it happen. Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Today, I want to talk about ADHD. Why? Well, for the last 10 years, I've been working with contractors and have noticed that a lot of us, especially those of us who are entrepreneurs, have some level of ADHD or what we would call neurodiversity inside of us. And it's both our biggest strength and, if we're honest, it's also our biggest weakness. And the data backs this up. Some studies show that as much as 10% of adults have an ADHD diagnosis, and a high concentration of this is among entrepreneurs, which makes sense, right? Our brains are a little different. We move faster. We love chaos. And if you think about it, this all gives us a bit of a dopamine rush that we're constantly chasing. And that's why today I wanted to talk to Peter Shankman, entrepreneur, author, and advocate for neurodiversity. He's best known for his book, Faster Than Normal, where he reframes ADHD as a superpower. Today, that's exactly what we're going to be talking about. Peter is raw, he's real, and I absolutely loved this conversation with him. So let's get started with Peter. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Peter, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on, my friend.
Thanks.
You got it, man. We got lots to get into around ADHD, neurodiversity. We'll get into what that is. But I wanted to start just with you and your background. You've made, I think, a bit of a splash when it comes to speaking to this and speaking openly about this. How'd you get here? What's your story?
Damn clue. I wasn't supposed to be any of this. I was in graduate school studying fashion and portrait photography because it was a great way to meet women when you're 22 and fat. With like 18 credits left, I lost my financial aid, and the government, you know, government sent me an email that said your parents make too much money, or sent me a letter that said your parents make too much money, we're taking away your financial aid. I sent the government back a letter and said, my parents do make too much money, but they keep it. And government didn't find that funny. So I moved back to New York, and this is in the mid-90s. I was hanging out in something called the Melrose Place TV Gossip Chat Room on America Online.
AOL.
Oh, yeah. I was pretty early to the game. And someone in the chat room said, you know, my company's trying to build a newsroom. Why don't you submit your resume? And I go, sure. I had no experience. I'm sure it'll be awesome. 2 weeks later, I was being moved down to Virginia to become one of the founding editors of AOL News. And this is back with the day when AOL was the internet. That's how you got online. I was so early to the game. I had Peter at AOL.com. So it was pretty crazy. And I had an amazing time. And worked there for about 3 years, left AOL, moved back to New York, had no idea what I was doing, but knew that this whole internet thing was going to start to take off. And while at AOL, I had become sort of the de facto voice of talking to the public about what digital news is, right? What digital news does. So I wound up saying, well, I could do that. I could do PR. I don't know what PR was, but I figured I could probably do it. And so I launched a PR agency called The Geek Factory. And within 3 years, we had clients like Napster, Juno, AOL. We were doing ridiculous stunts and getting tons of press. And the clients loved us. And I saw the writing on the wall. I knew the dot-com boom was not going to last. And I sold the clients and the agency, clients and the staff to a larger agency. I walked away, tried to take a year off. Went to Asia, about two or three weeks there. I came back. I started flying back home. I called my parents in the airport. I'm like, I'm flying home. I'm like, why? You're supposed to be there a year. Like, you never taught me how to relax. I slammed on the phone. So I started consulting, and I'm sorry, guys. Waffle, shut up.
I started consult. This is the rescue dog that I swore I'd never get. When you're a single dad, you compromise. Your daughter wants a dog. You don't want a dog. So you compromise and get a dog. Shut up. So, and I love him. He's a great dog. He's a pain in the ass. He knows when I'm doing these interviews. So long story short, started a PR firm called The Geek Factory, sold it, consulted for several years, came up with the idea that journalists and sources shouldn't have to hate each other, wound up launching something called Help a Reporter Out, or Harrow. Harrow grew into the top platform in the world. It was acquired by PR Newswire. I tried to go a different direction, wrote several books, consulted, and eventually would just, you know, enough people were saying, hey, the company that bought Harrow is killing it. They're really destroying the service. Do you want to start it? You should start it again. I said, no, you don't want to go home again. You can't go home again. And wound up launching about a year ago something called Source of Sources, or SOS. Sourceofsources.com is now the largest source repository in the world. Free press for everyone all the time. From the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, LA Times, Martha Stewart, AARP, you name it. So I'm doing that. I am writing several books on neurodiversity. Throughout this whole thing, I wound up occasionally trying to figure out how come I could start and sell companies, but couldn't remember to like take out the trash or go to dinner with my now ex-wife. And that's when I finally got diagnosed with ADHD in my I guess, early 40s, and realized that it actually wasn't this curse that everyone said it was. It was actually a gift, because all my success was coming from ADHD. And so once I figured that out, I realized that I could sort of change the world with my neurodiversity. And that became my goal. And so I wrote Faster Than Normal, which changed the world in terms of neurodiversity, changed everyone's world in terms of how they think about neurodiversity, how people think about ADHD, dyslexia, autism, executive function disorder, all that stuff. And yeah, from that, I launched the podcast Faster Than Normal. We have about over 300 episodes now. Yeah, at the end of the day, it was really about sort of embracing what I thought were my curses, which actually turned out to be my gifts, and decided that I wanted to help people do that. So I wrote another book. I wrote a kid's book as well called The Boy with the Faster Brain.
Yep, I saw that.
I'm working at a girl's version now. You know, and the premise really is always just to be able to help people understand they're not broken. And now one of the other things I do is I launched a company called Mental Capital Consulting, where we help companies attract, hire, and retain neurodiverse employees while helping to create neuro-inclusive workforces. So Morgan Stanley, Adobe, Google, they all use us to help them become better in the neurodiversity space. So yeah, crazy world, but having a lot of fun. And I'm a single dad, most importantly, of an 11-year-old kid named Jessa. She's awesome. So it's between her and the dog and me. I don't get to relax much, but it's good.
You're moving, man. You're moving. You've done a lot too, and a lot of different things, which is interesting. I was reading all about you, and I've everything you've done, and you've got a ton to say around marketing and all types of. I was like, I really want to talk to you just about your message around ADD and just like you said, neurodiversity, because I think I personally, and I know a lot of our members have struggled with this for a lot of years, and we don't talk about it much. We kind of like, we're like, yeah, it's just like, maybe it's a thing I have, haha. It's like, no, this is like a very real thing that if you position yourself properly in your organization, and if you realize what the gift it actually is, you can go and do things that most people on this planet cannot do. When you look at this, like, when you say, hey, I realized this was a superpower, like, walk me through, like, what do you mean by that? What are you able to do that nobody else can do?
Well, I mean, when I decided to launch Harrow, I came up with the idea en route to the airport. I was flying back from, I think, LA to New York, and I came up with the idea en route from LA to New York, and or en route to the airport. On the flight from LA, I had a stopover in Houston, so I flew from LA to Houston. By the time I got to Houston, I had sketched out an idea of what I wanted to be. I went to the lounge at the airport in Houston, called a guy I knew who builds websites. I'm like, can you put something like this on paper? And I'm going to email you my ideas. I did. And I landed in New York and had a website. 2 days later, it was up and running with clients and with, or 2 days later, it was up and running with sources and journalists and everything like that. And like a week later, we had our first advertiser. So a lot of ADHD is the premise of jumping out of an airplane and figuring out how to build a parachute before you hit the ground. And I love that analogy because I'm actually a licensed skydiver with over 500 jumps. Normal people play golf, right? I don't do that. I went to a golf course once to watch a golf, like the US Open or something with my my ex-father-in-law, and he's all excited. And look at that hit. Look at that. I'm like, what the f- are they doing? Like, they're hitting a ball, then they walk, they hit the ball again. I don't have to shoot myself in the head. So, you know, it there are two types of people, those who play golf and those who skydive. So the premise of ADHD is basically that we move very, very fast. We tend to take a lot of risks, incredible high highs, incredibly low lows. You talk to anyone with ADHD, and chances are they've also battled depression at some point in their lives, or any kind of neurodiversity in that regard, because for a lot of them, at least people my age, we spent the first 30 years of our life being told we were broken, right? And then our first 20 years of our lives being told we were broken, the next 30 years of that in therapy to prove that we weren't. So, you know, imagine that whole thing. I spent my entire life, my first 20 years. It's funny. I took my daughter to a performance at my high school where I went to high school. I went to a performing arts high school in the city, in New York City. And they did Little Shop last night, Little Shop of Horrors. And so I took my daughter to see Little Shop, and she really wants to go to that high school. And she has talent. She'll get in. But, you know, I was walking to the hallways, and all of a sudden I get that sort of imposter syndrome feeling. And I'm like, dude, you've been out of this school for 35 goddamn years. Get over it. You know, there's things that get embedded into your brain when you're young. It's hard for them to go away. So, you know, the concept of when you finally do realize that the stuff you're dealing with is a gift, mm-hmm. it really allows you to change your life. I mean, the stuff that I deal with in my brain on a regular basis now, you know, I don't think about doing things. I just do them. If they work, great. If they don't work, okay, at least I tried. I remember, you know, there's a great quote that I use to sort of explain how my brain works. I only have two speeds. I have namaste and I'll cut a and that's pretty much how my life works. And so that's more or less me.
You mentioned in some of your other podcasts that I listened to you in, but you mentioned this idea that we are all in pursuit of dopamine. And I fully agree with this. And I actually think this is not just people with neurodiversity. I think this is the whole planet. I think all of us find a path to dopamine, whether it's raising our kids, doing heroin on the street, running a business. And that's the button we keep pressing over and over and over again to find happiness in our lives. And I feel like the way you described it, I was like, it's like amplified in your brain. It's on another level where you got to press that button even more often. And you got to do it even more extreme. Hence you skydiving, interestingly enough. Yeah. And it leads to burnout if you're not careful, right?
100%. I mean, because the problem is that much like any addiction, you get your first hit and you feel great. But then second hit, third hit, fourth hit, you need just a little bit more. And you need a little bit more to keep that same high. And so you have to find alternate ways to get it. You know, the funny thing is that the difference between skydiving and, say, like doing coke is that when you're skydiving, your body is giving you the dopamine, serotonin, and adrenaline that you crave, but it's giving it to you naturally.
Yeah.
And so it doles it out, much like if you were on a helicopter that had a 10-minute fuel reserve. It wouldn't switch to that fuel reserve and dump it. It would let you know exactly how much you have left and give you the amount, only the amount needed to get you back home. On the flip side, you know, doing drugs or something like that basically dumps all the dopamine all at the same time, which is why you crash so hard. So for me, being able to know that, okay, I'm going to go do skydive, I'm going to get all this dopamine, adrenaline, serotonin, and then I'm not going to have a huge crash, I'm going to sleep really well, right? Because there's no negative side of that. That to me is the best part. And so it's really about, again, understanding how your brain works and what you can do to help keep improving it.
Do you find this is something, so I have dyslexia, it's a little different than ADHD, but there's some similarities. Do you find you see in patterns more than anything? I see so many patterns with like what's going on politically, what happened out on the street, this the weather today, what my employee said to me, what the numbers look like in my spreadsheets and my CRM. And I'm like, we need to go left. And they're like, how did you come up with that? And I'm like, I don't know. I just see seven things at once and I see a pattern.
Yeah. I mean, I see a lot of patterns. The problem with ADHD is that I see them too quickly. They go away. But, you know, for instance, the Israeli army, the IDF has an entire unit called Unit 6600. That is made up of nothing but autistic soldiers, because autistic soldiers see patterns and can delve through data like no one else can. And so the amount of stuff that they're able to see and do is light years ahead of where we are. And so it's fascinating when you think about something like that they have the ability to do all this because they are reading in to and leaning in really to what social media and maps and data and all the stuff that we see as distractions, right? They look at and they're able to zoom into what matters and eliminate the rest,
yeah.
Right? So social media isn't a distraction. Data isn't a distraction. Looking out the window is a distraction. Everything when you have this type of brain, if you know how to use it, everything can become sort of a singular focus beer.
Why do you think, so we have 650 companies we work with, a whole like 1,000 members. I sometimes will have a big event and I'll ask people, I'll say, how many of you have ADHD or ADD? And like a third or 40% of the room's hand goes up. And that's not normal. Why do you think entrepreneurship is so tied to this?
The highest percentage of newly diagnosed people with ADHD are actually people in their 40s, 50s, parents who are watching their kids get diagnosed and saying, huh, this looks familiar. I see this, you know, and they realize it might be the exact same thing they're doing.
So this is the topic I want to get into today, which is a lot of entrepreneurs I work with, and I think you might see this in entrepreneurship in general, we have a tendency to get ourselves into entrepreneurship, and a lot of us have these different brains. We just think differently. We don't fit in society the way everyone else does and gets a job. Given that, it can be extremely challenging to build a structure and build a company around yourself when you're also just flying a million miles an hour. So I want to get into just like different things around. First thing actually really was just like, how should you as an entrepreneur structure yourself in your business to make sure you focus on what you do best? Because I find it's easy to go and do a million things you suck at and then only do a couple things you're good at. But if you can narrow in on, like you're saying, on that one thing, that's what
I'm an incredibly big fan of hiring the right person. I know what I'm great at and I know what I'm good at doing. It took me a long time to figure it out, but I know what it is. So I allow myself to do that thing and don't let myself focus on the crap that I'm not good at. I have someone to do that for me. You know, I talk about this a lot in the book. It doesn't have to be a ton of money either. Like, you know, I hate cleaning my own apartment, but for some reason I love going to someone else's place and helping them tidy up. It's weird that the brain works like that. So, you know, I am more than happy to, sometimes before I had a cleaning woman, I would trade with people. Like, dude, I'll clean your place if you clean mine. Right? And it's fun. I enjoy it. Oh, wow, what's that? You know, it's cool in that regard. I'm not sitting there looking at every remnant of my life and it's taking 8 hours just to get through half a room. So it's about figuring out what you're great at and figuring out ways around and other ways to do what you're not great at. And, you know, whether that's you doing it in a different way or having someone else do it for you or offering a trade or something like that. And then once you figure out what that is, then you go crazy.
So what like specific to you, even like what are like the first role you would hire for in a company when you're trying to grow it up?
A good assistant.
Yeah.
And I've had my assistant Megan, for 18 years. I don't know how long she's been with me now. And I couldn't imagine, not having her. You know, I hired her because I was screwing up and I got lucky with, you know, within a few months, she figured out exactly how I worked. She knew what to do, what to take away from me, what to let me do, you know, and it's been that way ever since. I don't schedule shit on my calendar anymore. I'm not allowed to, right? I'm not allowed to. She does. She literally took access away from me. So it's all about knowing those things and knowing what to do.
And being humble enough, I think, too, to let go. I think a lot of us, we feel like we need to hold control and I should be able to do this. And it gets us into a pickle. It is interesting. It's the simpler, what society would perceive as the simpler tasks that if let off your plate will actually allow you to excel in what you truly do. I have a very similar story, Peter, with a girl named Caitlin was the first employee I ever hired for Breakthrough Academy. And she literally doubled my effectiveness and I was blown away. And not to say that role is not important, but in the marketplace, it's less expensive than a head of sales. It's less expensive than a head of our production team. It's the one that, and for me, provided the most amount of value.
Yeah, no question about it. And that's really how it works. I mean, it's the premise that whatever you can do the best if you're not weighed down by the stuff that you're not good at.
Let's talk about tasks for a second. And I don't want to be like overly prescriptive here, but like, what are the tasks that you are brilliant at? And then on the flip side, what are the tasks that you are just dog shit at?
I'm great at writing. I'm great at speaking. I'm great at coming up with big picture ideas. I'm terrible at implementation. I'm terrible at basic accounting and scheduling. I'm terrible at follow-up. So again, I know what I'm great at. I know that if I sit down and decide to start a business, I will go full throttle for 6 hours and get it done. But if there's something I can't do, if there's something I can't get an answer for until tomorrow, whatever, I will forget about it.
I think a lot of people listening
figure that out. I handle those situations with tech. There's a website called Follow Up Then, which has literally been, you know, a life changer. If I know that if I can't get a response for someone or someone replies, hey, yeah, I don't know the answer right now, so text me tomorrow. I'll simply reply to them in BCC 24 hours@followupden.com. And 24 hours later, Follow Up Then will automatically email it back to me and say, do this. You know, or 2 days later, or 8 hours later, I park my car in Terminal D, beat four, you know, whatever it is. It's all about using tech. And I could do it now on the iPhone, or, you know, remind me in 6 hours to do this. Or so, yeah, there's it's very helpful.
When I'm leaving for the day and I've got things like my keys, my phone, maybe like I'm going traveling, I need my passport, I put it all right in front of the door. So I'll trip over it before I can leave because I'll forget them and I'll be at the airport and I'll be like, I don't have my passport.
Well, it's funny. I keep a go bag. I travel so much that I have my suitcase has, I never take my passport out of my suitcase. I never take it. I never take my, you know, every time I come home, I dump I dump the clothes and I put in new clothes, right then, right? I have my hair stuff, my shaver, my razor, whatever. I have all that, I have an extra copy of it. All stays in the suitcase. But yeah, it's that kind of stuff.
I'm going to get into those a little later. I have a whole section I want to get into, like just habits and how to basically structure your life. Here's one thing I want to focus on. So you had said something around just burnout earlier. And I think that what I notice for me, and probably sounds like you too, like you're living in the future always, and you can always see what's coming, and you're always thinking and focusing on all the different variables at play, and you're trying to navigate through this crazy world we have.
An extent. I mean, I never imagined that our current president would the markets as badly as it has over the past couple of days. But other than that, yeah, I tried him.
It caught me off guard too. But essentially, like you said, you were chasing dopamine, and this leads to burnout. I've felt that, I think a lot of us do, and it's almost like too late by the time we get to our burnout stage, that we should have identified it like a month ago, but we were just like full hard charging. Any like thoughts on this? How do you avoid this? How do you catch this early? How do you avoid burnout?
I make sure to do my to know. So I have a very specific start to my day. I get up around 4 a.m. and I get on my Peloton. I sleep in my bike shorts and a pair of socks. So I wake up, I slip into my shoes, which are already connected to the bike, and I just go. I might do 30 minutes, I might do 4 hours. It depends, but like tomorrow morning, I'm doing a 2-hour ride at 5 a.m. just because I can sleep an extra hour as it's Saturday. But, you know, I know that if I don't get the dopamine that I need to make my day better, it won't work. I've been doing that for years, like 15 years now. When I was 3 years old, my daughter was 3 years old, I slept in on a Sunday. I didn't work out. And she, we're having breakfast like at 8 a.m. or whatever. She goes, Daddy, were you on your bicycle today? I go, no, honey, I slept in. I was tired. Why? You're not as happy. All right. Kid was 3 and she saw it. So it really is an understanding that what you can do and what you're good at doing, you need to make sure you do every single day, make it a habit, make it a ritual. Because you have to do what's something I call playing the tape forward. You have to ask yourself, how is this going to impact me in 12 hours, right? If I don't work out and I sleep in, what's going to happen? Well, chances are if I don't work out and sleep in, I'm going to wake up a few hours later, feel like crap. Ah, I slept in. Now I'm all angry at myself. I'll just order a pizza and have that for breakfast and lunch. And it's very easy for that to become a cycle. Well, now it's been 2 weeks and I've gained 10 pounds. Where's the benefit, right? So you have to start with that first moment where you're like, okay, this needs to change.
You're forcing healthy versions of getting dopamine versus unhealthy versions.
And look, I'm not perfect. I've had many unhealthy. Like I said, I only have 2 speeds. I don't drink I rarely drink anymore, let me put it that way, because I don't go to open bar parties. I don't go to events anymore because if the alcohol is in front of me, I'm going to drink it the same way I drink Diet Pepsi, right? And I'm going to feel really great. I saw a great quote. I only have 1 drink, but after that first drink, I turn it to someone else and he drinks a lot. And so I'm very much aware of how my brain works. And so I know what to do and what not to do. I try to take the healthy route as much as possible.
Do you find addiction higher in people that have more neurodiverse brains?
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah.
And massively so.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. We all tend to run in the same circles. People with addiction, people with neurodiverse brains, people who do triathletes. If you made a Venn diagram, the three would, you know, you put all 3 of them in the middle, they'd all focus right dead center.
We're the crazy weirdos and we need a lot of stimulation. And if we don't get it, we'll go find it in bad ways.
Exactly. So. That's the key. You know, I joke, I'm probably 3 bad decisions in a row away at any given day from being a junkie in the streets. Right. And you know, you just can't make that first one.
I find a lot of the people I work with, and me included, we found work as our thing. Entrepreneurship is our thing. And we started to hit that button too hard. And this is where we can destroy our lives and our families and our wallets and all kinds of things, because we're just always chasing that next dream. And so for some of people, it's drugs and alcohol. And I actually see that in my membership group too. Actually, it's not that that's not happening. I find work, entrepreneurship, goal setting, hitting goals feels so good. And you hit it and you're just like, let's do more of that. But if all you hit is that same button for 5 years, 10 years, you're burnt out, man. You're toast.
No question about it. Yeah. You got to do other stuff.
You also talk about this concept of imposter syndrome. And I will say, like, I have felt this a lot. I'm sure I've seen you spoke on stage with like 80,000 people. I can only imagine what that's like. And then you come home to your daughter and your dog and you're just like, what the fuck is going on?
Actually, no, I time it really well. Like, my assistant times it really well. She, when you get off the stage, you're high as a kite, from those chemicals. And so the goal is to, time it so that when you get on the plane, it's 2 hours later, you fall right asleep and you wake up back wherever you are and you're perfectly normal.
How do you manage that in your life? I find that it sometimes can feel like I know who I am from when I grew up in high school and who my like younger self was. Now I'm out there, you know, managing tons of team and staff and money and I've got all this stuff going on. And you don't feel like you is empowered sometimes. How do you manage that feeling?
You know, it's difficult. You have to, it comes down to understanding yourself and understanding that sometimes you're going to feel a certain way. And because of that, you just need to bail out. You know, I equate it again to skydiving. There have been days when I'm in the plane and as I'm climbing up to altitude, I'm talking to myself, you know, no, I'm just not feeling this. I don't want to jump out of this plane right now because I'm not feeling good about it. I'm not in the right headspace. Not right. I'll give you a perfect example. My girlfriend and I are supposed to have dinner tomorrow night. Actually fiance now. I keep saying that so it becomes clear. My fiance and I are about to have dinner tomorrow night. I'm supposed to go with a couple of very close friends. Between what's been going on with the markets and the fact that I've lost a couple of clients because now they're worried about the markets and they don't want to spend money and blah, blah, blah. It's been a shit week. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten enough sleep. I had a couple of nights where I had events on those nights and I couldn't, you know, I didn't get my normal amount of sleep. And so I sent an email to them today and I CC'd my girlfriend. I'm like, look, I love you guys and I truly apologize, but I'm not in the right headspace. I said, if we go out tomorrow night, I'm not going to be in a good space. You're all going to be asking me what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong. Eventually, I'm going to get pissed off from hearing that too much. I'm going to get angry. And none of us are going to have a good evening. I said, I know this is going to happen because I have to speak from experience. I said, so rather than deal with that, I said, I would love if we could just reschedule. And I'm going to spend the weekend on my couch, not talking to anyone. That, and sometimes you need to do that. As much as it sucks, you need to do that.
Peter, can I also point something out, man? Like, I'm just doing this podcast with you right now. And I'm like, you're an extremely like raw, real human being.
Oh, yeah.
You are just you, and the world will get you the way you are.
That's what I'm supposed to be, man.
But I think that's also what you're kind of saying, which is like if I'm feeling like I shouldn't be doing something or I don't want to be somewhere, I'm real about it. I'm not going to like hide behind a mask and just pretend everything's all good. I'm going to be me, and it allows you to dissipate this feeling of imposter syndrome. Is that what you're kind of telling me?
Yeah, you don't really have you don't really have a choice. I know what I can do. I know what I can't do. I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm not good at. You know, and sometimes again it comes down to having to be, you're the only person you can be. Sometimes it just comes down to my understanding that I have to be honest with myself before anything else,
mm-hmm.
because nothing good will come of it if I don't.
Just be the real you and just let the world see you for who you are. And I find that people generally just, that's what they want anyways. But when we get nervous and we think we need to be something we're not, because there's this expectation of us.
Well, how many years of my life did I waste trying to do exactly that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pointless.
Somebody put it one of my bosses a long time ago put this to me. He said, Danny, you need to stop putting others in charge of your happiness. And when you give them the ability to make you be something you're not, that's what you're doing every single day. And I was like, right. Okay. I'm going to get into some other stuff, but before we do, there's one other thing I want to talk about was just the use of medication. So how do you use this as a tool, not a crutch? Do you like, what are your thoughts on this? Because I know that people use it recreationally even now, like it's like,
you know, I was, someone was telling me about that years ago. They said, you know, yeah, man, you know, I remember sometimes I'll take an Adderall. Dude, man, you're 48, man, the fuck up and do cocaine, you know. I have a prescription for Concerta. It is a long lasting extended release formulation of methamphetamine. I take it It's supposed to take it daily. I take it 2 to 3 times a month.
Mm-hmm.
When my assistant literally puts on my calendar pill day, which means that 2 or 3 times a month, I have meetings. I have more than 3 meetings in a day. And more than 3 meetings a day are going to not be fun. So I will get up even earlier, I'll get up at 3:30. Because if I take it any later than like 4 a.m., I'm up all night. So I'll take it like 3:30 and I just need that little extra boost in addition to the cycling or the skydiving or whatever to keep me focused. But if I take more, if I take it, I just don't need it. Most of the other times in my life, I can find other things to do to keep me focused, whether it is, like I said, skydiving, exercising, triathlon, you know, I mean, I'm marathoning, running. I joke that I've done 27 marathons in my life. I don't finish with the Kenyans. I finish with guys named Ken, but I finish, right? And, you know, I find ways to turn the frustration into benefit. I mean, I have a pool in my building, and I'm probably going to go down there tonight and do a good hour of laps. I already did the bike this morning. I'll probably do an hour of laps tonight. But again, it just comes down to how you figure out what you have and how to make it work for you.
Yeah, you're finding natural ways to do this. And then should very specific moments in life you need that extra focus, you're utilizing it just for that, not as a daily habitual part of your routine. Again, I've listened to you a bit, and there's one thing I think about a lot, which is this neurodiversity thing comes not just from the modern society. It actually comes from our primal nature of ourselves, does it not?
Absolutely.
And so
it's
been
this way for thousands of years. We're just finally deciding to learn what it is.
So makes us good hunters. This makes us good survivors. This makes us alert and aware of the world around us. And then modern society has tried to box us all up, and that's where we're feeling the rub. It's actually more the natural state of how we should be. And so what you're saying is like, go be that natural version of yourself. Go find that exercise and that way to get out there and stop feeling like you just need to be in that box and take drugs all day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Let's talk now just for those who maybe don't have ADHD that are listening to us right now. I've had some of my members actually call me. They're like, I have a member on my team. I'm pretty sure they're ADHD. They're actually in an administrative role. I'm not actually sure how to deal with this. Any just things on how you can support someone who's on your team, who you know has ADHD or some neurodiversity piece to them? How do you best support them?
Let them talk to you. Let them talk to you and tell them what you, let them tell you what they do best, how they work best. Let them know they're in a safe space to do that.
Provide just like an open air of just like, let's be real.
Yeah.
Do you find in today's day and age, people are still embarrassed about this, or
starting to get better.
Yeah. I find it as well. But like you're saying, if you don't provide an environment for that, they probably won't bring it up because you're their boss and they don't want to get fired. And they might think that, there'll be judgment. Is this any different than the entrepreneur? We talked earlier about specific tasks and things to put them. Is there anything where it's like you can get a lot out of people if you position them in certain areas of the company?
I think that people become, they rise up to the challenges you give them. If you don't give them a lot to do, they're not going to feel fulfilled. They're not going to be challenged. If you give them a challenge, neurodiverse people especially will usually rise up to feel that challenge without question.
Which is interesting, especially if you're struggling with someone. I could see how you pull more off their plate and be like, let's make this simpler for you. But you're actually just putting them in a spiral of now I have nothing to look forward to. Now I have nothing to attack. Okay. Is there any specific jobs? Like when you look at the types of jobs that neurodiverse people should be in, what are the roles?
Nothing really specific. I mean, people could be creative, mostly creative. I mean, neurodiverse as a whole has so many different variables. There are, I've met autistic accountants who I would hire tomorrow. They're the best accountants in the world. I've met, ADHD people who I wouldn't let near a calculator, like myself.
Yes.
Right. So it's all about understanding the person specifically. Don't label the person by their, or try to understand the person because of their diversity. Understand the person because of what they do and how they're great and what their feelings and passions are and what they love.
Good. Yeah. Don't label someone. Okay. Note taken. Thank you. I label myself all the time. And I think sometimes that allows me to focus on what I do best, but you're right. I can't put that onto other people. They have a very different life and background experience. So
absolutely.
Cool. Okay. We started to get into a little of this earlier, and we can kind of just finish off with a few of these thoughts before we finish off this podcast. But in your book, Faster Than Normal, there are best practices that you kind of present, and it's things around routine, simple choices, physical activity, leveraging hyperfocus, tech tools. We've touched on a few. Is there any more that you would just like to give people listening where it's just like, this will help you start to use this in your life?
Yeah, routines. I mean, God, it's all about routines. It's about rituals. It's about, you know, resolutions fail, rituals succeed. So the premise of you know, you're not going to lose 30 pounds by next Thursday, but you can focus on going shopping and buying healthier ingredients that'll stay in your fridge all week that you can eat, right? My closet is labeled, and it has two sides to it, and it's labeled. And the sides are office/travel and speaking/TV. And office/travel has button-down shirts. I'm sorry, office/travel has t-shirts and jeans. Speaking/TV has button-down shirts, jackets, and jeans. And when I know that I'm going on TV or I'm speaking, I look at my calendar in the morning before I get dressed. Oh, speaking, okay, go to that side. Oh, I'm in the office, I'm not doing anything, I'm traveling, great, t-shirt and jeans. And, you know, and the reason I do that is because all my sweaters, my vests, my suits, gorgeous suits, they're all in my daughter's closet, on one side of her closet. Because if I had to wake up every day, what should I wear? My God, that sweater. I remember that sweater. Laura gave me that sweater. God, I wonder how she's, I haven't talked to her in years. I wonder how she's in the crap. It's 3 hours later. I'm naked in the living room on Facebook and I haven't left the house. So you have to understand how your brain works and understand how to avoid the triggers that will get you to that bad place.
I watched, have you ever seen the movie Up in the Air? It's
of course, one of my favorite films.
Yeah. So the way that he packs is exactly how I've designed.
Same. Yeah. Everything gets folded, everything gets rolled, 100%.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go on a second date with someone because she told me that if we ever traveled, she would check luggage.
Right. Yeah, we don't check. Me and my wife never check anymore.
Sorry, not happening.
The airport is like my worst enemy. There's too many rules and regulations and processes and I bump into all of them. The shirt you're wearing, just random, the shirt you're wearing right now, which side of the closet does this sit on? Because it's a suit, but it's a shirt.
It is, right. You're very good. You picked up the fact that it's a t-shirt. Yes. If I'd been a little further back from you, you wouldn't have noticed that. A company gave me this information about the shirt, and they sent me a bunch of them, and I just fell in love with it. I'm like, cool. You know, it's not a t-shirt. It doesn't look like I'm being interviewed with a t-shirt. But yeah, it's pretty fun. So this is a company called Wow From Home, I think. They came out during the pandemic. Right. And it works. It does the job.
The basis is just like, you guys are all working from home.
That, you know the difference. Oh, wow. Look at that. No. So, yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Go ahead.
This sits on the TV/speaking.
So. All right. Okay. Let's finish this off. So the only other thing I'm thinking of is just like, there's those who are listening that may not fully understand like what it's like to be like this. And is there anything that you'd want to say to them? Just how to position, how they communicate, how they connect, how they just work with people on their team, their family, people in their life that have some neurodiversity where you're just like, look, see it this way. And I also have a thought on this as well, but I thought I'd let you start on this.
Everyone's brain is different. Einstein once said that everyone is different. Every animal has its unique strengths, but if you try to judge a fish by how well it can climb a tree, you'll be sorely disappointed. So everyone is different. No one, it's not a one size fits all situation. So understand whether it's your kid or your employee or your partner, understand everyone works differently. And if you can allow them to show you how they best work, they will often more than not surprise you and delight you. If you try to put them into the same barrel as everyone else, you're going to be disappointed.
Very, very similar thought. It's just take time to understand the people because they have magic inside of them in ways that a lot of people would never see or understand. But if you give it a chance, you'll find it. I've often felt like I don't have one leg, but I'm missing a leg, but you can't see it. It's just called dyslexia. And if you can just know that there's a fake peg leg underneath my jeans here, then you're not going to go make me run a marathon.
Well, that's the key. I mean, I've always said to people, you know, it's you, if you want me at my best, here are the things that I have to do to get there. And it is, I don't like using the term disease. I don't like using the term condition because I do believe it to be a benefit, but it comes with, what was the character? With great power comes great responsibility, right? So I have to be able to understand that if I want to have that great power, I have to do things that allow me to get it.
It's good, man. Well, thank you for your time, Peter. This was good. This was a neat little podcast. I wanted to get into this element that I know probably is, you know, not something people talk about all the time. So I appreciate you doing this. I appreciate you just being real too and just being open to talk about this stuff, not only just with us, but I know you do this as a part of your career. So thank you for opening up the conversation for all of us. And is there anything, any final thoughts? How do people connect with you?
Yeah, so my entire life is, my email is peter@shankman.com. I'm on every social platform except Twitter, because no. And it bums me out, man. I was the 49th most followed person at one point on Twitter. And then it was bought by Nazi. So, you know, it's kind of hard to be on it now. But I'm on Threads. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on my email's peter@shankman.com. I answer all my own email. I don't do my calendar, but I do answer all my own email. So if you email me, I will reply. And yeah, the book is Faster Than Normal. The podcast Faster Than Normal. And Source of Sources is a free service to help yourself get some press and get in the media. So yeah, I'm out there. I'm easy to find.
Great, man. Okay. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure was mine.
Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.